Item number 21 here, Dr. Wesson.
Yep, and I hate to slow everybody down.
Oh, no.
But there are a few things I need to call your attention to, because obviously from our harvest, we have a growing fishery. I looked up this before the meeting. 2013 is even better than where we are in 2012. Things we're doing seem to be working, so we need to protect what we're doing. We've been blessed as much as we can be blessed by. Last year we got $2 million from Governor General Assembly, and this year we're going to get the same. Hopefully that'll continue for a while, because that's one of the most important things for oyster restoration, is just maintaining the consistency. And just going through the different parts of it, in your briefing, we have a little bit of seed work, and I'm going to use what we have found in doing seed where the commission pays for it to move it for watermen to harvest, is that we cannot make a cost benefit, just cannot get the benefits to come from the cost we spend. So we do very little of it, but we did about $85,000 worth last year for the Nomini, which is way up a river that never gets any spats at. I looked at reports on that from this year, and we're not doing very good on that, but maybe the reporting's bad. But we're in this plan, and it was adopted by the Shellfish Management Committee this a couple weeks ago, that we do another 10,000 bushels using the funds that they've come from their user fees to move 5,000 bushels of James River seed up to way up the Rappahannock and up in some areas in the Yukamako that they can hand tong on. One developing issue that I just want to call your attention, because it may come up at some point, is that for years and years, VIMS advised the commission, the industry, to not move oysters from the James River. Always go laterally. Move from the salinity you are in the James River, which is low, to the same salinity. Do not move them to high salinity. And that's advising you both, because you're going to lose your money. But more importantly, you know, as we are potentially developing resistance in some of these small tributaries and higher salinities, when they move seed from the James River that we know has no resistance because it's always in fresher water, not exposed to disease, that before those oysters die in that tributary, they could breed and pass their genes into that population and conceivably start bringing the population back down to where it was before. And it had not really been going on at all until this year. And this year there's tremendous amount of interest in people moving James River seed to the Pocosin, to Back River, to York River, places where it just shouldn't be moved to. And I have been telling them that it's not a good idea, but I'm getting them to rewrite that recommendation. But that's something we're going to have to watch in the near future. But you should not move these oysters to higher salinity because they have no disease resistance. The second part of our seed program are in the Piangtank and in Great Wicomico, and this just shows the Piangtank, where we have our public beds that we take care of. We allow industry to apply for a certain number of bushels. We set a quota based on our stock assessment in these two rivers, and this year we think we can do 20,000 bushels in each river. You apply for it, and in order to take seed out and move it on your private ground, you have to give the commission back either enough money for 2 bushels of shell or replant 2 bushels of shell for which you took. It's been very successful. This just shows the Piangtank. I mean, standing stocks have come down a little bit, but they're still okay. But the important thing is, in the Piangtank River, just looking at areas that we don't harvest and areas we do harvest, the patterns are almost the same. I mean, the number of oysters we have per meter are about the same. Great Wicomico is the same issue. the seed areas, when you compare them to the, like the core sanctuary areas, we don't see any difference between the two when we start harvesting, either in bushels per acre or total bushels. So apparently the 20,000 bushels we've been taking out of for several years when we're putting the shells back are maintaining the stocks in those rivers. And it's very good for small planters and big planters to get these seed. These seed actually have some resistance, so you can move them into areas that the salinities are a little bit higher. For shell, I mean, shell is our the biggest thing we're going to have to deal with in the near future. Shells naturally degrade. The $2 million is, if it was in 2010, would be doing a tremendous quantity of acres. But since 2010, we have this rapid growth of aquaculture. We have a lot of partners that want shell for projects that they want to do. We have Maryland trying to get aquaculture going, trying to do things up there. And all these things have come together that they're just a bidding war every year for the house shells that we had always depended on. We set a price. I don't know how many people are going to sell to the state for our price of $2 a bushel when they're being offered straight up $4 a bushel from Maryland, as an example, for the same shells that we would pay $2 for. But we don't want to get in that bidding war because I think this is going to be a short-lived thing. Eventually, people are going to come to their senses on if you spend too much for shells, there's no way you can make your cost-benefit work out either, whether you're private or public. So we're going to stay with two, and the reason we can stay with two is that we have the option in the state of going for fossil shells, and this just shows the two sites that we'll be using to dredge fossil shells is up around Tri-Belle Shoal, near Jamestown, Williamsburg, off Kingsmill. We had an area right in here that we've been dredging since 2001. It was 22 acres. That's all gone. We've taken all those shells. We started last year into this next site, which is about 6 acres, and then we have a site down here that's about 4 acres, and we got another site further down here that's about 3 acres. For the long term, this is a very serious issue. These are our only shell dredge sites that we have right now that we know of that are easily accessible. And so that's a looming problem down the road, but we will use those shells. Majority of what we plant this year will be those shells, and we do a request for proposals to do those with get a big contractor in to do the dredge those shells and to plant them for us on the areas. The areas in your handout, I had a chart in there of the areas that if we had our wish list and we had enough money, those are the ones we need to shell. In our stock assessment, we check the shell amounts each year. We want to shell when we are less than 5 liters per meter, which is it's a very meager amount, but we found that we can maintain productivity with 5 liters per meter. We would like to have much more, but we can't afford much more. But that's our wish list on there. And just to run through where they are, I mean, there's a couple areas in the James, areas in New York, Mobjack, Piangtank, Rappahannock. There's quite a few of them in Rappahannock and Greater Comico, Tangier, and Pocomoke. In our meeting, the only little bit of controversy that we had amongst the members was using some of this money to shell these areas right up on the Maryland line where, if you recall, this fall when we opened the season, we opened up 2 areas that we had not harvested in years and years. They had some stocks on them, but there's no shell. And we had 2 very good seasons up there, one for November and one for December in 2 different areas. And now that we've taken the orchards out, there's no shell left. I mean, the oysters were the culch up there. And so it was our hope that we would go back in those areas, reshell them, and we'd be able to start a little rotation up in the upper Pocomoke. But we've been having problems with Maryland boats coming across that line here, and the industry was afraid that if we invested our money up there on shelves right now, that it would, might not be a good investment for us until we can get this under control on the crossing of the line. So I went back and I met with the guys in both on Tangier and the guys in Saxis last week, and we came up with a couple of areas that you can see the line is here. We're already shelling these areas, and we don't seem to be having a problem there. And so we're going to move those upper areas down to a little bit further, about a mile down the sound, that everybody was comfortable with for this year to do the shell planting. We have a little bit of shell planting that we also do on Seaside, about 4 acres, and that's where we catch our own shells over there and plant those. We have a new project this year that we're partnering with the Nature Conservancy in the Piankatank River. They have been involved with us on this shell issue in trying to work out projects with Corps of Engineers and us on how to do the projects that the Corps of Engineers want to do. 100% sanctuary. We think that the rotation areas do better, but anything that the Corps does, we have to give a 25% match, and we don't have cash match for that, so we've been using our shell resource as the match. Well, our shells are disappearing. Shells are the only thing that industry, that we know of right now, that industry can use to catch a product on. So we've kind of been stymied on these projects, and you've heard the debates with the Corps. And the Nation Survey came up with an idea for the Piankatank on how they could step in and help, and they went out and found a grant with private money of $500,000, and we found a piece of private ground that they could purchase, and we could do a sanctuary on that area with their money, and that would provide $500,000 in match for the Corps to come in and do some other sanctuaries in the Piankatank and not have to use our shell, because we had the in-kind match from the Nature Conservancy. So it worked out very good for everybody. Since we know that this shell on sanctuary is an issue, this also opened up the opportunity for us to test alternative culch on this Nature Conservancy one. And what we're proposing is that, I can pass this around, that we use in that bag, there's shell and there's ground concrete. And we're proposing to use ground concrete that's the same size as shell for the sanctuary in the Piankatank, and we're also going to do one on the harvest area in the Rappahannock at the same time to see if it could be a substitute that could be harvested. I mean, we know orchards don't care what they attach to. I mean, golf balls, bones, big pieces of concrete, little pieces of concrete. But the question is, can we come up with something that private industry and we could use if we run out of shells? And so that's what we're going to be trying for this area in the Piankatank, and we have a JPA, a joint permit application out for other federal agencies to weigh in on this, but we hope it's a very good choice. And the way we want to do it is actually try to keep everything the same as we would be doing shell. Keep the concrete the size that the boats that we normally use for shell planting can do this work for us, and if it works out, they'll be able to do it in the future. Because like this year with no house shells or very few house shells, these three or four boats we got left that make a living off planting shells for us, they're not going to have anything to do. So this project is perfectly timed to give them some work to do this project, and we'll find out if this ground concrete can be handled just like shell, and then the watermen can go out and catch it on the areas that are harvest areas. We had a couple of other little projects. We have a little bit of money that the secretary gave us for a sanctuary reef in Nassauwatuck Creek using some alternative structures called orchard castles. We're just about ready to let the contract on that from a from a request for proposals. We're finishing up the last year of the Blue Crab Disaster Program, which has been a very successful program where we've been training watermen, crab harvesters in doing aquaculture. We've done about 132 of them and trained them in cage aquaculture, about 110 in spattle and shell. We finished the cage, and we need to finish up this year. We got about $250,000 left on people that we've already taken into the program to get all their products finished for the spattle and shell. It's mostly just to buy larvae. And then the last little bit was we're going to continue using the user fees for to keep the little project that we have going with Countos Rays. We're still trying to find things that we can do with them. They're still a big orchard predator. We've been close on some markets, but we're putting a little bit of funds in there so they can pay watermen to catch these Countos Rays for the processors to try different things with them. So any questions on that?
Any questions from the commission?
So this NOAA program is just finishing. This is the last year of it. No money for this.
Nope.
Is there a grant in?
The grant runs out. We've got to get the money out. Get everything on the ground by September.
Are we filing for an extension of the grant?
Extended. We're out to as far as we can extend.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was federal money as part of the 2008 federal blue credit.
Yeah. No, it's we've taken it a long way. It's been very good for us.
That's good.
Jim, to that point, you have in here that there may be some extra funding available under that.
Yes, I mean
that program. But how much do you anticipate?
In theory, if everybody gets on the stick and does their project, we'll run out perfect. But my understanding of working with them now for 5 years is that some of them are going to be slow and they're not going to get ready, and so I don't want to lose the money. So we're going to put out a notice that anybody that would like an additional $7 million in a unit, that's what we usually give for each set, we'll get a list of them. And if they're ready when we get in August and we got to spend money, that we'll just start down the list. And, you know, we'll have a lottery on who gets first and we'll spend the money.
Okay, so it's using that same pot of money.
In case some guys, like Mr. Chatham got hurt. Well, he'll be able to get himself together to finish his project. I don't know.
Any other questions from the board? Mr. Plumlee.
On the TNC funds, do those actually come into the state and then are applied, or do they?
Yes.
They do?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
So they'll give it to us as a grant, and we'll do the project, and then that'll serve as match for the court next year to do more in the Pyongyang.
Okay. That's it. That's all I have.
Yep. I have one more, and I'm recognizing the time, but I just had a comment really about this. In the shellfish advisory meeting we had a couple weeks ago, there was a lot of discussion about the developments of this oyster industry, and Jim's highlighted the increased harvest we've had in the public fishery, and it's a testament to the commission and the Commonwealth, what the secretary's done in the governor's office. And we've seen a lot of improvement. I think there's concern, and this commission may want to address this in the future, about limited entry into this fishery. Right now, it's been wide open, and how many licenses have we seen? Additional licenses in the last... So I think it would behoove the industry to take a look at preserving what is there. There are a lot of people that can go in and get a license to dredge oysters in the first 2 weeks of October when the resource is bountiful and they work for 2 weeks out of that season, and then they go into a different profession that they have. And the rest of the watermen that make a livelihood off of this resource are left with the remainder. I think we need to seriously consider setting a control date maybe for this fishery. It's done in a number of other fisheries, and maybe request a public hearing be held to discuss this matter.
And we're going to be talking about that in a SMAC meeting, and we want to work on stuff for a month or so and get back to them in probably early April. But what I need from the commission is just an adoption of our, you see in there we have approval of procurement activity and our procedures, and that's because we are allowed to do things a little bit different with procurement through our code sections, and we use notices and lotteries and things like that to do most of these projects and with Waterman.
Oh, I would move to approve the plan as submitted.
All right. Motion by Mr. Plumlee. Do we have a second?
And the procurement.
And the procurement.
And the procurement.
Yes, sir.
Second by Mr. Erson. Matters before the commission. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Dr. Weston.